thanks very much for having me here. I'm a little bit embarrassed after so many really high-powered talks, but I'll do my best. So this is on work that's joint with Kremnitzer. And at the end of the talk, I'll mention other projects with other people that are also involved. So the idea is to understand analytic geometry and also differential geometry and derived versions as a kind of relative algebraic geometry. So this is a different approach to Mauro's approach, and there's also articles by Mauro and Tony Yu, and also Damian mentioned in his talk the use of algebras with extra operations. But this is a different approach that I think is an alternative, and it has its own benefits as well. So, but this relative algebraic geometry, so I learned about this from under Spec Z. And also from the Hag papers of Tohen Vitzotsky. So from Hag, Hag develops derived geometry. Where the input is a monoidal model category. It satisfies a long list of properties, and there's various topologies involved. And those properties are sometimes called a Hag context. So our view on derived analytic geometry, and maybe also C infinity, is all related to a fixed Hag context. But other examples of Hag context could be of this monoidal model category could just be abelian groups, chain complexes over a field of characteristic zero, and simplicial abelian groups. So our example is not too far from these. Okay. And in Hag, they talk about growth-ending topologies, sheaves, cotangent complexes, and all the things you want to start doing geometry. So the suggestion in this talk for this analytic purposes is to use the category of simplicial in Bahn R, and I'm going to explain all this, where R is a Banach ring. And the theorem, which I'm not going to really talk about too much, but it's also still partially in progress, the Kremnitzer. It's not completely written up yet, is that M is a Hag context. And I'm going to give some details about it, but I wanted to use most of my talk to discuss more explicit down-turf things. And most of our proof is very standard to people who work with model categories. So it's not too important to discuss the details of that. But examples So let me start with just mentioning Banach rings. So a Banach ring, I'm just going to mean, is a ring R equipped with something like this that's going to satisfy triangle inequality. For some constant, and it's non-degenerate, and the metric associated to it is complete. So the examples to keep in mind that will be interesting for us are just the integers with the usual absolute value, CR, QP. This is non-Archimedean examples. CT, and then the Novikov ring. Okay. So each of those has some kind of analytic geometry that you can do. So about this category, so let me start. Yeah, so Bahn R, it has finite limits and co-limits. Kernels, it has kernels and co-kernels in particular. I should say what Bahn R is. So this category, the objects are pairs V with a norm, where V is a module. And then this norm satisfies the analogous, I mean, similar conditions. So even if R is non-Archimedean, I'm going to allow myself to consider all modules. Okay, so you get a category which has finite limits and co-limits, but no infinite products or co-products.
It's
sorry?
It's incomplete.
Yeah, sorry. And the same. Yeah, it's also non-degenerate and complete. How do we construct interesting objects in Bahn R? We cannot take infinite products or co-products, but there's a closely related category where you just so in Bahn R, the morphisms are just bounded linear maps. And you could also consider this contracting category where the morphisms are bounded by one. So you have also Bahn R less than or equal to one. So this is no longer an additive category, but it has all limits and co-limits. So for instance, if I have, like, you can take the coproduct vi. So this is some subset of the Cartesian product. And it's just defined by the condition that the sum of the norms is less than infinity. So this is kind of L1 space, and the norm on it is just some. Okay, so this is a like a good object to have for resolutions. And one more thing about Bon R is that it's closed symmetric monoidal. So this thing has the same objects, but the morphism's bounded by one. Okay. And I should also say that Bon R is closed symmetric monoidal. And I'm using the completed projective tensor product. So it's defined as follows. You should take the completion of just the algebraic tensor product with respect to the semi-norm. U is the infimum. I have to take all possible ways of writing U, so some VI WI. And there's also non-Archimedean versions of this if R satisfies the strong triangle inequality. But I'll mainly just talk about this one. So even if R is non-Archimedean, I just take the same category. OK, so one thing about Bon R is it's not abelian. And the thing that fails is just one of the axioms for being abelian, that if I have a morphism, one of the things you want in an abelian category is that the co-kernel of kernel F, okay, so this may not hold. It may hold. So if it holds, the morphism is called strict. But that's okay. There's a kind of canonical candidate for a Quillen exact structure. And it happens to be a Quillet exact structure. And that amounts to a quasi-abelian category. So I won't go into the details of that, but this thing is quasi-abelian, and you can do homological algebra in it. So just write that here. This homological algebra is developed very nicely by Schneiders. I mean, many categories are quasi-abelian, like categories of filtered objects or things like that. And the point here is that in the homological algebra here, you don't want to identify, you don't want to kill arbitrary quasi-isomorphisms. So for instance, the co-kernel of this map is W mod the closure of V. So you do not want to identify this with its co-kernel. Not. So you only identify things that are strictly quasi-isomorphic, not arbitrary quasi-isomorphisms. but you still have a derived category, and you can do derived functors and all kinds of homological algebra. I should say some definitions. So these are definitions that you can make in any closed symmetric monoidal quasi-Abelian category. So an object is flat. If tensoring by it preserves strict short exact sequences, so in an Abelian category, everything is strict, and an object P is projective. If for all strict epimorphisms, that Hom PE surjects onto Hom PF. Okay, so in this category, you have enough resolutions that are both flat and projective. So if I have any V, I can find a strict epi PV. And PV is flat and projective. You can always find this. So this category has enough projectives in that sense. Okay, but as I said before, this category doesn't have limits and co-limits, so many constructions in analytic geometry, like taking stocks or taking algebras that are kind of limits of algebras on disks, you can't do that in any reasonable way in Bon R, so we need a bigger category. And you can formally add co-limits, so int Bon R. So this is a category consisting of formal colimits, but thought of as pre-sheaves, formal filtered colimits. And this has all the same properties. So it's, again, quasi-Abelian, closed symmetric monoidal. And it has enough projectives as well. It's very close. It's like a Grothendieck Abelian category, but the quasi-Abelian version of it has many very good properties. I'll just say how the tensor product and internal Hom work. So they just, I mean, turns out that you can define it this way. Now, one of these formal filter colimits just And the internal Hom this is an actual limit, and this is like the quotes co-limit. Okay. So this looks like very weird. I mean, but you can. There's a concrete subcategory where you look at essentially monomorphic objects. And those are what's called bornological vector spaces. And they have the same derived category. So bornological vectors, well, complete bornological vector spaces. I mean, usually this is done over a field. So let's say that if R was a field, you could take this category. And these are like vector spaces equipped with a notion of bounded subset, such that the addition and the multiplication by k, scalar multiplication, are bounded morphisms. So it's similar to topological vector spaces. And this category also has many of all the same properties. For instance, if you work with Fréchet spaces or topological vector spaces, you don't have as nice properties. So that's why we don't work with that if you want this internal HOM. So in particular, the dual is just defined as an obvious way as HOM from V to R. So everything is kind of bounded. And so now I can define a nuclear object. And this nuclearity really helps with the functional analysis. So definition, B inside int bon R is nuclear if for all W that is just in bon R, not in int bon R, bon R we have that HOM from W to V is W dual tensor V. Okay, so now I can finally define the model structure. I'm not going to go into the details of proving all the Hagg axioms or even stating them, because it would take much too long and it's pretty standard. So if I go to simplicial objects in bon R, the model structure that I'm going to use so a morphism is a weak equivalence or fibration. And only if for all projectives that I get a weak equivalence or fibration of simplicial sets by homing from P. And take the cofibrations to be given by things satisfying the lifting property, and then this turns out to be a model category structure. It's really in Quillen's work or in Helvey Christensen. So this gives a model category structure. Now I can define affine schemes to be the opposite category of commutative monoids. So Dold-Kahn thing, you still have it here for simplicial things in anything additive. So that still applies. But if you want it to be monoidal, you should work in characteristic zero. I mean,
what happens if you want to sort of like build these spectral sequences for double complexes?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like they're like it's easiest to do it in bisimplicial objects. But then you really have to know that the corresponding spectral sequence converges to bisimplicial objects. Like, do you know if you actually end up with, say, like a pi star 5 rank guide?
I'm not sure, actually. I just like in most of the examples we're interested in, the int system is either the natural numbers or the real numbers. I mean, or something bigger. I'll give examples. I haven't thought about how about the double perspective. So we have com of int bar, which I mean strictly commutative of simplicial int bar. So the monoidal structure is just easy to describe here. And you can take strictly commutative monoids in this thing. And this also has a model structure where we just take the forgetful map, and we define objects to be vibrations or weak equivalences if they are after the forgetful map. And again, you have to use the lifting property to define cofibrations. But that works. So this has this projective model structure. And of course, affine schemes are just defined to be the opposite category. So now we need modules, because we want to talk about some homological characterizations of topologies. So if A is in mod R, so if A is in com, so then we have mod A. Again, just strict. I just mean strict. So it's an object of S in mod R together with a map from A tensor M to M that satisfies the obvious things on the nose. And again, this has the forgetful functor, and that's used for the weak equivalences and vibrations, and then again, lifting property for the cofibrations. Okay, so this is a model category as well. I mean, it's also satisfies the Hager axioms. Okay, so now I can define the formal Zariski topology, then I'll give some examples. So this topology was kind of mentioned in Toe and Vizzotti, but it was never used because it was, in the specific case, it was immediately found to be equivalent to something else. This kind of formal version of it, where things are not a finite presentation, was never really used. So let's call it the formal Zariski topology. On, I don't know why I'm putting that in quotes. Formal Zariski topology on the affine schemes. So I should define covers. So I'm just going to write the algebras. I mean, I'm just going to write the rings because it's just the opposite situation. So there's a cover. I mean, I guess technically this is supposed to be a model topology. It's a cover if there is a finite subset. And this really gets you into trouble if you don't insist that the subset be finite. Maybe somebody knows something about this. I would be happy to hear. But you need to prove things. It could be very hairy if you don't take finiteness or some other condition finite. Even though in analytic geometry we usually allow infinite covers, but I'm not going to allow that for now. So it's finite. Such that one, the push forward of sheaves is fully faithful, or said in the other way, that the homotopy category of mod bi homotopy of mod A is fully faithful for all I and J. Okay, so I'll talk about that condition in a second. And then there's a covering condition. It says that M to N in O downstairs of mod A is an isomorphism if and only if it becomes so after tensoring up. So M tensor A. I can stop. And you can make this definition in any monoidal, nice enough monoidal model category. So I'll just. Okay, in mod bi. Okay, so I just want to discuss this condition a little bit. Let me give an example. So, I mean, in the applications I care about, M is the monoidal model category is this one. But you could take, you could make the same definition in any one. So if we take M to be just abelian groups, simplicial abelian groups. Actually, so let's just take, let's take this. Now, this first condition, and this is a general thing, but the first condition is saying that you have this relationship. Okay, so this relationship is called a homotopy epimorphism. If I didn't have the L there, it would just be an epimorph. It would just, it exactly means epimorphism. It's equivalent to being an epimorphism. So first of all, okay, so let's call this condition homotopy epi. The main thing I want to say is that this is implied by, but not equivalent to, being a flat epi. So if it's flat, you can remove the L here. And then if it's epi, it's B. So certainly, if it is a flat epi, this implies being a homotopy epi, but not the other way around. OK, so in ordinary algebraic geometry, if A to B is a finite presentation, let's just drop the I, then it's equivalent in ordinary algebraic geometry. But you need this finite presentation condition. For instance, I can give you, like, I can just take an algebra and map it to the stock at some prime ideal. It will not be flat, but it will be a homotopy epi. So if you allow infinite things, not finitely presented things, it's really a different condition. And this gives a different topology that I'm not so sure people have considered really, so for infinite things. But and our analytic things are infinite, so it kind of makes sense. So I'm going to take this kind of topology where you take the completed tensor product. So when I talk about analytic algebras, we're going to be interested in understanding this condition where I complete the tensor product.
And swooping left to right arrow as it's crossing through it.
So yeah, sorry. In general, it's not true. Thanks. But if the map is, if, at least in the context of ordinary algebraic geometry, if the map is a finite presentation, then it is equivalent. For instance, if both A and B are just finite algebras, finitely presented algebras. Oh, and I should have said I forgot to say the most important thing, that this is equal to this in the ordinary case, and that's why we call it the Zariski topology. This is equal to spec B being a Zariski open in spec A. Okay, so now I'm going to talk about analytic geometry and this same condition, which here you think of as very big, dense opens, will give you small opens when I work with the completed tensor product and these analytic algebras. Okay, so that ends the abstract nonsense portion of the talk. And for the rest of the talk, I just want to talk about completely concrete algebras. So, the first algebra that starts this whole subject for me is the disk algebra. And it's like functions, you should think of it as functions on the closed disk. So, I need a little bit of notation. So, if R is a Banach ring, I may want to consider a weighted rank 1 module. So I'll denote that by RR. It's a rank 1 thing in mod R, in Banach R. And what it is just R, but I'm changing the norm. So the norm here of an element A, if I take A in here, the norm of A is just the number R times A. The little r, sorry about this, too many R's, but little r is a real number. A, okay. So now I'm going to introduce the disk algebra. So SR, I'll define it to be this symmetric algebra construction in the contracting category of some module V, where V is just a very simple sum of free modules, or of various, these are called radii. And you can think of this as being things that converge on a disk. So this is a subset of the formal power. As a ring, it's just inside formal power series. And it's the functions converging on things whose valuation is less than or equal to Ri. Oh, I'm going to be using symmetric algebra constructions all the time. So as you know, this is just in any category that has colimits, you just take, and I mean, that's the general symmetric algebra. So I'm doing it now in the contracting category, because I couldn't do it anyway in Bonn. So in I might sometimes denote SR in a different way. So let me write that. I might want to write it as squiggly brackets x1 over r1, xn over rn. If you use the non-Archimedean notions, you again have some coproduct, but then it would be called a Tate algebra. And you can quotient it by ideals. So let me call affinoid algebra. An affinoid algebra, I mean SR mod a finitely generated ideal, equipped with the residue norm. So maybe closed ideal. Okay, now that's nice. So you can try to use these as your building blocks for analytic geometry. But there's a little bit of an issue that comes up at the boundary of these things. And that's why, and they have a bad theory of differential forms that's full of problems. And the main issue is that at the boundary of the disk, the functions are not analytic in a neighborhood. So if I take my disk, look at a point of the boundary, doesn't need to be analytic there. So what we do is we look at things that converge on a slightly larger disk. So let's define SR with a dagger to be, and now I'm really going to use the colimit in end bond. So it's the colimit. This is a notion that comes from end bond R. I mean, it is a filtered colimit, so I just take that. Of things of slightly larger radius, so n s r plus 1 over n. So it's important that this thing is countable colimit. And another important feature of this is that all the maps in this system are nuclear. So every SR2 is nuclear. Or R1 bigger than R2. So it comes from an element of the dual of this completed tensor product this. But by the way, I mean, Banach spaces are never nuclear unless they're finite dimensional. So even though the ornological or Fréchet, spaces are, they seem bigger, they're actually more simple. This nuclearity gives a lot of good properties. For instance, these things will be reflexive. So if I take A, if I quotient this by an ideal, this will always be reflexive as a consequence of the nuclearity. Okay, so these are called dagger affinoid algebras, or overconvergent. Okay, so far I've defined two classes of algebras inside COM of end bond. So I can take the full subcategories generated by them. I'm going to introduce one more, but so here I introduced two full subcategories. In order to introduce the Stein algebras, I have to talk about certain localizations. I mean, they're called localizations of these guys. So, sorry? Not right now. I mean, it is, but these happen to be discrete things. You can consider them as simplicial as well. Okay, so So we need to introduce, so there's, in non-Archimedean geometry, even though what I'm saying holds in either case, there's certain topologies, growth ending topologies that people study. This one is kind of called the weak G topology, what I'm about to say, but anyway, we want to introduce certain morphisms. Certain distinguished morphisms, where A and B are in one of those two classes. So A and B are either affinoid or Dagger affinoid, doesn't matter. And B is going to be called AV for geometric reasons. I'll say what V is in a second. So let me just give two examples. The first is called Laurent, where AV is, I'm going to add a variable. So obviously I have to do this in either in the Dagger way or in the ordinary way. I mean, this notation, you could kind of guess what it is from what I said about symmetric. Earlier I gave the formula for coproducts. So you can do this and mod out by YF minus 1, where F is an A. So geometrically, this you should think about. There is a certain kind of spectrum you can associate to these, even though I don't really want to emphasize that perspective at all. But what this is saying geometrically is that you're looking at the points x such that f of x is bigger than 1 over s. So it's called Laurent because it's some kind of annulus. And the second, so A is a closed subset of AV, closed subalgebra in this case. And the second guy is Weierstrass. Again, Y over S, this time by Y minus G for some G in A. And the geometric picture here is that G of X is less than or equal to S. So cutting out, so it could be like cutting out some disk, something like that. And here, A is actually, it's a very different situation. A is actually dense inside AV. And also, this morphism is nuclear. Anyway, I'm kind of running out of time, so let me accelerate. So I can now define the Stein algebras using these. So classically, people kind of exhausted Stein algebra, I mean, Stein domains by compact spaces that were getting bigger and bigger as you went out. So a Stein algebra it's a certain limit in the category that I'm working with. So it's a filtered limit. Here I can, because it's filtered, I can take the limit in algebras or just either way. Where each guy is a Weierstrass localization. So we're getting bigger and bigger, which means the algebras are getting smaller and smaller. It's kind of an intersection. And now this is a countable limit, but it's not accountable as a colimit. It would be uncountable as a colimit. So if you want to write this in Bahn, you have to use a uncountable filter indexing category. But it could be done because the end bond contains both limits and co-limits, and there's actually a formula for products, and using that you can write this down explicitly. You could also write it down in terms of formal power series. It's just the formal power series that converge on every one of these. So you can, I mean, I'll give a more explicit example in a second. So each AI plus 1 to AI is a virus stress localization. And then there's a, you want to make it so that you really change each time. Like, you can't just have A2 equal to A3. So what you want is that that there's a kind of technical thing about the spectrum should be in the interior of the next guy. So I'll just, maybe I'll quickly say some examples. So examples. I mean, I said that these algebras are reflexive. These are also reflexive. And they're nuclear. A is reflexive and nuclear. And the duals are often also well understood algebras. So for example, if I take this dagger algebra of the disk of radius R, is dual to the Stein algebra of the disk of radius 1 over R. So that's going to be, in this notation, limit, where S is 1 over R minus something, is because I'm going to get bigger and bigger, R of X over S. So this is like the open disk of radius 1 over R. And this is the closed disk of radius R, the functions on the overconvergent functions on the closed disk of 1 over R. But I can also let R go to infinity, and you get this duality between the global functions. So I'm going to define O of A1 to be the limit as you actually go to infinity. So let me go to the next board. I'll just do it here. So O of A1, or let's say an for any n, is defined just to be limit in end bond. This is a multi-radius of x. Okay, so since I won't have time, I'll just quickly say, so these Stein algebras are matrizable. They satisfy, it's like, well, we have a definition of what it means for an object of end bond to be matrizable. It's not really literally a metric, but I'll skip that. And so in our picture, analytification works by one way to do it is you can write an object as a limit of A1s, an algebraic variety. And then you can analytify by sending the polynomials in R will analytify to O of A1. And we proved that this is a homotopy epimorphism. what that allows you to say is that the relative cotangent complex vanishes. So the story of cotangent complexes is discussed in To and Vitozzi, and it amounts to taking bounded derivations and using the model category structure to derive the functor of taking Kähler differentials. So because this is a homotopy epimorphism, the relative cotangent complex vanishes. That's true for any homotopy epimorphism. So what I'm getting at here is that this is also, you can think of this as a symmetric algebra in Indbahn. So symmetric in Indbahn of just a one-dimensional space. This is not really like, it looks like it's not an analytic object, but we know exactly how the cotangent complex functor behaves on it because it's cofibrant for the Kähler differentials. So I'll just end by mentioning, it's kind of funny. You have to work in this story to prove that to prove that O of An, because I defined it as disks, you have to prove that it's O of A1 tensored with itself n times, but we did that. And you can also put derived tensor products here, it doesn't matter. This thing is flat over R. So I'll just mention four projects on this subject with their co-authors. So So we showed the what's called the weak G topology on affinoids agrees with the restriction of this formal Zariski topology restricted to affinoids. Two is with Bambosi. And this is the same as that, but for the overconvergent situation. I'm lying a little bit because in one, it's only the non-Archimedean situation, but this dagger story is for either. And three with Bambosi, Kremnitzer. This is the Stein story. Again, to show that the classical topology agrees with this formal Zariski topology. And here you can recover, for instance, the classical topology over C that's induced from the Euclidean metric on Cn. So recover on any complex analytic variety. Well, modulo this thing about infinite covers, but and we've compared that also to topologies that people get in the p-adic setting. And I'll just end by mentioning one work in progress. It's nothing to do, it's like completely different than these. So all of these three are comparing this abstract story to what topologies we actually care about and showing that you can recover them exactly on the nose. Four is with Konstantin Ardakov. Ardakov, and in four we are looking at infinite order differential operators. So, well, you can consider this following sheaf of endomorphisms over R of O, and this is a sheaf of Indbahn algebras. So you can do this in general, and this is a candidate for infinite order differential operators. I don't have time to explain that. And we worked in this paper, we worked out the details in the case that R is the algebraic closure of QP. And we showed that it agrees with other notions of differential operators, of infinite order differential operators, what he calls decap. He has like four papers or something on decap. And he does Balanchine-Bernstein stuff in the p-adic setting for this. By the way, I'd like to show that this is really underived. So if I can show that the higher endomorphisms vanish, you can use it to think of O as a Morita module and do version of Riemann-Hilbert. Okay, thanks.
These topologies. There's another interesting topology on analytic manifolds, which is the one I guess sometimes people call the subanalytic topology, considered by Kashiwara and Shapiro. Can you see anything like that in your theory?
Can you remind how that? I mean, I've thought about this a little bit, but.
So the idea is that it's a topology where the complements of open sets have some kind of are essentially subanalytic manifolds. So subanalytic means it's generated by a class of analytic things, and the things that you get from analytic things by taking images under submersions.
That's very possible. So one topology that you can do, which is a little bit closer to that one, is the analytic Zariski topology.
Uh-huh.
The one you're mentioning is much more subtle and refined, but the analytic Zariski topology, I believe you can get it by actually taking the flat epimorphisms instead of the homotopy epimorphisms.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's good about this topology that I mentioned, and by the way, there, it's also only finite covers are allowed. One good thing about that topology is that it's, there's this notion of O-minimal structures. So it's, anyway, it's the one you're describing also?
O-minimal?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that one is also, I mean, I think people in O-minimal theory also talk about that one.
Uh-huh.
It's like when they do analytic Whitney stratification.
Yeah, yeah.
But the one you're talking about, that would be very interesting, but it's not as obvious. The obvious thing would be that if you do take flat epimorphisms, I'm pretty sure you would cover the analytic Zariski one on the nose. But the one you're talking about, I haven't figured out.
So have you now got an infinity category of derived complex analytic stacks, which includes complex manifolds?
Aside from this issue of infinite covers, yes, because that technology is developed in Toyin-Vitsotsky. I mean, if you apply, so I have not really understood the Atal topology, but if you just take Zariski things, yes,
you find term that's obviously dual hand complex.
Yeah. So you can define a morphism to be a tau just if the relative cotangent complex vanishes, and try to follow what they do. There's some things I don't yet understand about that. So, but barring that, I can try to just apply what they do.
Do you add the necessary technology to do Osnikov induction?
No. So Mauro suggested a very important thing, which is the Postnikov induction, and we haven't figured it out yet. It's on the list of things to do. I think that after discussions with Mauro, once we do that, we can compare his categories to a subcategory of this huge thing, which contains crazy objects, and can give some kind of equivalence of categories once we do that.
Well, maybe having connected sort of the last talk to the second talk.
Oh, maybe I can take an opportunity to please thank the speakers for a wonderful conference.